Hey everybody, welcome. Radio. Welcome, welcome. I want to say hello to everybody this week. It is the 13th of February, and if it's the 8 o'clock hour, you have reached the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive. That is the show. I'm the person that's known as Citizen Payne, also known as The Sun, and you are?
I am Kay Thompson. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kay Thompson Live. Boy, do we have a show for you tonight. Citizen Payne, you running for office?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tell me, you running for office?
No, it's what you're going
to
say.
Okay, everyone. We're on the air. Kay Thompson here for Kay Thompson Live. My voice is a little hoarse, because it's a little hoarse. Like, you know, I'll get rid of this cold in a few days, I would imagine, or overnight probably. So, but anyway, welcome once again to Kay Thompson Live. We do have Dynamite Show set for you today on Kay Thompson Live here, broadcasting from the great state of New Jersey. So,
all right.
Yeah, Eric.
All right, everybody, we will, hold on, let me just put, so there's no feedback there. You might want to put that up to your ear so you can take part in the conversation. But
we have scheduled tonight Bob Law. You know, I think he's going to be calling soon. And then we are also going to be talking to...
All right, we're going to be talking to Keith Wright. He is a former state assemblyman, New York State Assemblyman Keith Wright is who we're going to be talking to. And... like we were saying, this week, the 13th, is about what? Last week, I think, or the week before last, maybe it was last week, that we experienced the President's State of the Union address on, I guess, last Tuesday it was. And it was eventful because you never know what's going to come out of the person's mouth there, the President's mouth. Let me just see this phone real quick. 1 second. We got a little extra feedback there. Let's, all right, great. Put that to your ear.
Okay.
And let me get my train of thought back, everybody. So we experienced more lies from the president, one in particular that everybody called him out on, even the mayor of the town who was a Republican. That was the lie that he told about the state, the city of El Paso, Texas, talking about it was a he presented it as if it had an immigration problem, an illegal immigration problem, people coming across the border and such, and that they now had a wall and it had changed the problem around. Well, true Donald Trump form, it was a lie, total fabrication, as the mayor of the town said and everybody else pretty much involved with El Paso, Texas said. And presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke had like a competing rally with Trump in El Paso just the other day. Let's go on and welcome one of our other co-hosts. I mean, the same day. I believe those were yesterday. Let's go on and bring in one of our co-hosts. I believe this is Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Good evening, Eric.
Year.
Yeah, same here.
Doing?
Good to hear your voice again, and Kay and Byron and everybody. You know, defining moment yesterday. I hope that we're at a point, or at least on the precipice, of a very significant change going on in this country as far as our politics are concerned, you know, because it has been apparent for quite some time that the ineptitude of the current administration is so telling that the tables are slowly changing, I'd like to think, you know, it's out there.
It is. It's changing, period. It's probably going to be changing within the next few months. Because we've got to get rid of that person in the White House.
Yeah.
He's doing more damage to this country than any other politician. Okay? He is a disaster for walking.
No question about it. It's an embarrassment, you know, and in 2 years that we've suffered through this, it's just amazing when you juxtapose what we went through for 8 years with a person of color in leadership, with all the degradation and mudslinging that occurred then by that other party, and you juxtapose that with what goes on now, you know, there's no telling that there's so much tension in the air, and it just amazes me how there's still some people out there that would show up at a rally in El Paso and cheer him on like as if he should run for another term. And,
and
that's what bothers me, you know?
Well, I mean, we have to face the fact that there's just there are those people, you know, that are deplorable in the United States. Hillary Clinton called it out right. And there are those people that are basically deplorable. You support this guy, you are a deplorable, because you're supporting a person who festers or incites racism, incites hatred, is always looking to denigrate people, who is a bully. So, yeah, you are a deplorable person if you support this guy. I mean, you know, this is part of the issue, you know, as is always when you have to, even in, when you see movies and TV, you know, the good guy, the person representing good, cannot use the same tactics that the person representing evil can use, because then, you know, they go, well, what's the difference, you know, when the police, who are the good police, I'm talking about on TV, the hero police, have to go up against a bad guy, they can rarely use the same tactics as the bad guy, right? Because that then it's like, what's the difference between us and them?
Right.
Well, the difference is that you're doing it for a good cause. I mean, you know, sometimes you do have to be prepared to fight fire with fire. And the whole head trip that the Republican Party and all these other people have been able to do up to the Democrats, you know, is really remarkable. It's like this Jedi mind trick that they put out there, like now they're trying to do. Look at the Democrats are so bad, or about the Muslim woman who made these comments. Look at her, she's so bad. When, you know, it just rolls off their tongue, the ease with which they lie. Trump has been doing this since he's been in office. Been disrespectful, been racial, been racist, been prejudiced, been saying the worst things, equate people who promote hatred with people who are trying to promote peace. This is what this guy's been doing. And now you see them calling for this woman to be put out of Congress, you know? I think the Democrats need to have those people that are willing to sit, like an Alan Grayson, you know? We need a dude like an Alan Grayson, even though he seemed to be a little bit, you know, extreme, but we need people like that, because just like they have people like that, we need people like that. If you have somebody who likes to slap people in the face all the time, you need somebody who's going to slap them back in the face and make them think twice
exactly.
as much about it. I mean, this is getting to the point where it's ridiculous. It's like, how much do we have to put up with this guy who's an idiot, who's a straight idiot and a liar and makes stuff up, and just so these people can hear good. No good stories about themselves. Go ahead, Mom.
What we need is a new march. A new march on Washington.
Mm-hmm.
This man is this dangerous. Okay? So I'm calling for a march on Washington.
Right.
Okay? And we have a whole lot of people who are joining on that march, you know? So let's start pushing that and moving that, and so we can move this country in the right direction.
Right, right.
Okay, because under Trump is no good for anyone, as you're finding out.
We need to march right to the voting booth and to get these people out of here. The Democrats, and I think that they all need to be held responsible. Every single one of them, the people who are part of his administration, who tell the line of these lies when they know this man is lying. I mean, this is a far-reaching thing in my personal opinion, that more people need to be held responsible and held responsible to the strictest standards of the law. You know, I mean, this guy Cohen, who found another way to avoid going to Congress. I mean, send this guy to jail already, man. Send these guys to jail. You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Eric. No, I was just going to say that the lines have been blurred so long when it comes to them and the law. I don't think Cohen has anything right now to even hope to get within the good graces of Trump again, you know. And, I hadn't followed his particular case because there have been so many different, you know, aspects to what's been going on in running the country and some of the convoluted mess that you have to sift through to get to understand exactly what's going on. But the bottom line is that he's made his peace, he's cut his deal, and there's so many others. You know, this Paul Manafort, you have the guy that they raided in Stone in Florida the other day. You know, I mean, and we could go on what they're doing with Bezos. I'm so glad that that came out with, you know, the Washington Post. You know, they're trying to do so many different things to disparage any progressive effort to right this ship as it's sinking. And what really bothers me, what I wanted to say before, is that all these people who show up for his rallies are the same folk who were affected by the government shutdown. They're the same people who now are complaining about their tax returns are not going to be as good as they used to be because he's allowed... The same people that don't have a clue about what the deficit has meant when Obama got it to the point where it was manageable, and in a stroke of somebody's, in a stroke of this man's pen, you know, institutes this new tax structure, and we're suffering for this, you know. He talks about building this massive edifice on the Mexican-U.S. border, like as if he's building the Empire State Building. You know, it's something elegant, you know, for him to look at to say, I did this. And it means nothing,
right.
You know? It's
that
kind of
that,
nonsense that you know, I find unfathomable.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's more to that, more than just the promise, because I don't think that he's a person that has that much integrity or honor, more than just he made it a campaign promise. I think he's got some deal worked out in terms where he's going to somehow, somewhere, somebody knows, or somebody's going to get paid off of building this wall. That's why he wanted the $5.7 billion, because some way, somehow he was going to work out for him to get paid, or somebody he knows to get paid, and that's what I think why he's attached to it as much as he is. And because this guy does nothing without it benefiting himself, and he's not going to work that hard and work that hard at trying to make sure this wall is done without it being some sort of benefit for him, because he's running out of people to blame. Let's go in and welcome our other co-host, Mr. Byron Saunders. Hey, Byron, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm down in the swamps here. I'm trying to make sure the wall doesn't get built, you know. So, but, you know, it's interesting when you come to Washington, D.C., and you realize the essence of the battle, and you're at ground zero. So the talk here is about the shutdown, the potential shutdown, and of course, Crazy Man is engaged in the theatrics of it. And then, of course, you know, and they're playing it like it's a television show, and that's the thing that kind of is very disturbing, because at the point of which, if you've got a deal on your desk, sign it, get it done, stop playing with people's lives, and that's the part that's very disturbing, because that's the game that he's playing, and at this point, it's like. It's going to come to a point where the country is going to say, you know, enough is enough, because this is how your businesses bankrupted themselves. You didn't.
Byron, are you in Washington right now?
I'm in Washington right now as we speak, and that's
really?
Like.
Really? No
and
kidding.
So,
what's the atmosphere like down there?
It's kind of an eerie feeling, because they had snow yesterday. It's going to snow on Saturday, and for a day that tomorrow is Valentine's Day, the speculation is, well, come on, let's get the deal done, because you're messing with people's lives now, and it's the second time around the day. And at the point at which there's a certain nervousness, because D.C. is government. There's no manufacturing companies here. There's no Fortune 500 set up here. These are all government employees that's
mm-hmm.
DC.
Mm-hmm.
And so
who are not getting their checks.
That's right. And here's something else that's very disturbing. When you're saying, and part of your holdup on the deal is whether you want to pay contractors who have been guided towards private-public partnership, and you don't want to pay those contractors what you owe them from behind, think about this. Every one of Trump's bankrupt organizations the workers had to file for a suit against him because he didn't
right.
pay his contractors.
Right.
Every last
that's
one
what
of them.
He did in Atlantic City, yeah.
And
he's
so
notorious for that.
That's right. He's notorious for that. So that's his M.O. And at the point at which something else happened this week, which was extraordinary, that down there in Texas, Beto O'Rourke did something I think the Democratic Party should take on as their modus operandi. If he's going to be out on the road and he's not working in D.C., we got enough Democratic candidates to put a candidate half a block from wherever he is and let them compete against the effort of his campaign rally, and let's have a Democratic candidate, same spot.
Yeah, that would be a great organized effort by the Democrats for a different candidate to be trolling him wherever
exactly.
he goes. That's an excellent idea, actually. Something that they should try to make catch on. That's a great great idea. See if I could shout
now,
that
my
up
sister,
the ranks. Maybe somebody could
hear
that.
My sister wrote a letter to the Democratic Party. I mean, we discussed this yesterday evening, and she said, Byron, maybe this is how you attack him, because he cannot battle all fronts at the same time. It's
exactly.
impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And if he's out there, if he's wasting our time on the road campaigning, his job is here in the Oval Office and on Capitol Hill. He doesn't deserve to have a vacation every time he's out on the road. He doesn't deserve to go to Mar-a-Lago. He needs to be right here in the grind like the rest of the senators and stay his butt home. Because if he can't do that,
in the
fire
ground. In, I,
that's right.
You said
in the ground.
That's right.
In the ground. I'm interpreting it my way. In the ground. That's where he should be.
Right.
Okay?
In the ground. That's right. I agree. And we can do that. But anyway, it's interesting because Washington is on alert, as it's, you know, I have many friends like yourself, friends who work
relatives.
In the government.
Relatives. Mm-hmm.
And these contractors who are private, part of the private-public partnership, when you stiff them, you're stiffing the small businesses. This is how they make
mm-hmm.
their living.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of, you know, the government shutdown. A lot of these people, like you were saying, a lot of these people are Trump supporters. You know, these idiots had the nerve to even be talking about lock her up. And there is a chant of lock her up at his thing. And they must be meaning Ivanka or somebody, you know, because still, and that's what racists do. You know, racism is ignorance, and it's ignorance to all facts. You know, and the history. So that's what these people are that support him, and they're pretty ignorant. And people that say they support him and that they're not, and this and that, it's just that's such a bunch of bull.
But you know what?
At this point, you can't really reasonably come out and say that you still support the efforts of this guy, because he's a traitor. He got there through Ogaden. Means.
Yeah.
I mean, I always go back to that. He committed treason
also,
to get in office.
Also,
yeah.
I can't understand why more people are not taken to the streets, okay? I can't understand that. What he has done, shut down the federal government, shut down your paychecks, and a lot of people really aren't even out enraged about it.
Well,
when you get enraged, you do something about it. Start another march on Washington. This is the time.
Well, there are a lot.
We have an idiot in the White House. He's doing more harm than good.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that are doing more. There's a whole lot of people that are enraged and are doing that.
I was going to say.
There's a lot of it going on now. And really, I think the more billionaires that get upset with him, you know, like this Jeff Bezos thing that's coming out now, that Trump's guy Pecker has, you know, they've been engaging in extortion against people that have been presenting negative images or stories about Trump. Not only that, but just engaging in extortion with people just in general over years. So, I mean, you know, once you get other billionaires that are willing to do battle with you or come after you, Hopefully that's a, you got to get a billionaire on your side. To fight a billionaire, you need a billionaire, right? And
I think interesting about his backers, his supporters, his 25 to 30%, we know that they suffer from the Stockholm syndrome. They are like the Jim Jones cult figures. They drink the Kool-Aid, there's a point at which there's a sickness that's attached to that, because he's lying. Everything he's coming out of his mouth is a lie, and they're fact-checking him almost to the point. Basically, I think what the talking heads are finally engaging in the kind of vetting process they should have done from the giddy-up. And ultimately, right now, I sense that as I've watched them, other than Fox TV, that every time he steps across the line and tells a lie, they're instantly saying, "This is a lie. This is a lie."
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to break down the Stockholm syndrome, because then it's
What I want to say, Byron, is M. Wayne and anyone else listening, to see pictures of this big fence, this wall, is incredible. Why is this allowed? How far does it go? And what is it? It's like separating one. I don't understand it.
Right, yeah.
And
well,
people are putting up with it.
It's like,
so what can be done? You see these pictures of a wall, and it's like, it's not a wall, it's like fences.
Right,
along the border? How do you do that?
That's the issue. They're building a wall along the border to separate people, keep people from coming into the United States. And the whole issue is whether they're getting into semantics a little bit, whether it's going to be a fencing or a wall or whatever. But I understand that certain parts of the border have had a physical barrier for some time. I mean, obviously, there are certain parts that do have where there is a fence or that part of that wall is up. I guess they were building a little bit of a couple hundred miles, but I think even before that, there were attempts to physical barrier. Yeah, you could.
Yeah, it's like a fence.
Some areas you can see through, but just the idea of the spending, I think, is the big thing.
That's right.
As
people pay
says,
for it.
The spending to that the funds could be better used, spread out across the board, and immigration, security, and things. What were you going to say, Wayne?
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, I find it so ridiculous. The whole thing with him. Byron pointed out the issue of fact checking, yes, it may seem like as if there's been an increase in that, but that's been going on for quite some time. And he is so rattled by it that at these campaign stops now, he is saying to the contrary that even the facts are not factual. It's the same nonsense that he used to spew in our faces about fake news versus Fox News. And even the folks at Fox to a certain extent, those who are worthy of their role as being a reporter and earn their press cards, they're holding him accountable. Not everybody over there is spewing the same mess, except for the not the journalists, but the commentators like Sean Hannity and others who are like that. I was about to call O'Reilly, but he's not there anymore. But people of that particular ilk have an agenda that they want to continue going, and they're the ones who are basically running the country. But the thing that saddens me is that if he doesn't get his way, he's already threatening to take funds out of FEMA and some of the entitlement programs that, again, poor people are affected by this. Even people in his base would be affected by this, but they seem to be blithely unaware of the impact until it hits them. And that's what really bothers me. How sophomoric could you be? Everything that he says his conversation is infantile. The things
right,
the
he's an idiot.
Describes things. Yeah.
He's an idiot. Let's go to our guest tonight. One of our guests tonight, I believe, this is Keith Wright. Is this you, Keith?
It is.
917. Former state assemblyman.
Hello,
We can hear you, former State Assemblyman Keith Wright. What's going on there? And
you
happen to be a close member, close friend of my family. What's going on?
It's good.
Hello,
I'm glad I'm on this show.
Well, we have with us Wayne Gilman and Byron Saunders also on as
Gilman. That's my man.
Yeah, I'm gonna say you.
Hey.
I'm gonna say you, Ma. We got Kay Thompson. That's the person of the show. got to let you know that Kay is here, it live
that's
and in full
awesome.
Effect. She wanted me,
all
looked
right.
at me like I was crazy. So
yeah,
of course you know you're calling in. There you go.
Yeah, and then you're following.
So, how you doing, and what's your assessment about some of the politics, just in general, of the nation there, Assemblyman?
Well, we're talking national politics now, or local?
Yeah, we're just discussing national. Then we're going
whatever you want.
Then we'll why don't you discuss your take on nationally first, and then let's get to the a little closer to home, New York City, and Harlem in general.
Well, nationally, I have never seen anything like this at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as someone said to me, Donald Trump dispels the myth of white supremacy.
He dispels,
never
the myth.
Dispels the myth of white supremacy. I've never seen such a dumbing down of the presidency. You know, people of color really got spoiled in many ways because when we had Barack Obama, God forbid Obama would do anything that Trump has been doing, and it would have been rioting in the streets. But
yeah.
You know, Trump's poll numbers have always stayed the same, and they haven't deviated. So he has this base of 38 or so percent of the country that really believes in the things that he's trying to do. Now, that being said, we have, his job is to just blow up the structure, blow up the Republican Party, and he's really basically disintegrating the Republican Party in many ways. So these folks that are supporting him, and I'm talking about the elected officials for the most part,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just think he's crazy, and he's just throwing, you know, conventional politics out of the window. Now, with that, he's also finding that he can't beat some of the conventional politics. Politics is nothing but negotiation and compromise. That's
exactly.
All it is. And Trump
mm-hmm.
is not really used to doing that, and especially with this latest decision on the budget and the government shutdown, he's talking about he's not happy, he's supposed to be the master deal maker, but he got outfoxed, you know, because he's not getting the money that he wants, he's getting a fence and not a wall.
Are you surprised? Well, you just said it, that he destroys white privilege, but well, I guess it's not a surprise that this guy is so stupid. I mean, because he really is. He really is not bright and revels in not being bright. And I guess because he is wealthy, that's been enough for many people he's come into contact with. Well, I guess everybody he's come in contact with his entire life. I guess he must be the stupid one out of the family because you never hear a peep out of the other ones. That his brothers
right.
or sisters, and it's
right.
just surprising that I guess you know amongst the rich people he's probably the ghetto rich person that comes. You know, there's you know we
well,
have our parties
yeah.
and there's some ghetto
right.
people that come too. I guess Trump must be the ghetto rich person.
Well, you know it's funny. I read a story where he was trying to buy Mar-a-Lago, and the folks in Palm Beach, you know, that's the I guess
Big
what mom. They call old money. Old money, and they did not want
old
him
white
to buy
man.
Mar-a-Lago because he did not fit in with the folks, you know, in that culture. But you know, once he bought it because he had the cash, they kind of tolerated it, and basically, you know, he's wanted to be like you know old money, so he bought the place, and then he had to run for president before they accepted him.
Wow.
And
that's probably
the
what
sad
happened.
Part about it, Assemblyman, is it, the people that he has working for him there, you know, he runs around the country talking about immigrants and immigration, and then the very people that he has working there and the place in Jersey and some of his other locales, they're not even registered to be here, you know?
Oh, right.
Yeah, they
exactly.
had a whole,
you know,
a whole funnel,
you know,
thing.
He's got to practice what he preaches, if you will.
Exactly.
And, he's got to practice what he preaches, which he does not do because he doesn't think that he has to.
Right. So, Keith, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and what's going on, the area that you represent, your background
okay.
in politics and things like that, and what is going on there in the area that you represent and what's going
well,
on in Harlem?
I'm a Harlem guy. I'm a Harlem guy, Harlem, USA, the Village of Harlem, Schomburg Center, Apollo Theater, City College. That's my area, my neck of the woods. I represented this area for 24 years in the New York State Legislature, in the New York State Assembly, and I had the call to run for Congress in 2016, and we were supposed to win. We lost by 1 percentage point, and the reason we lost, because a couple of black people running, we really had no business running, and quite frankly, the community didn't show much political discipline. And I'll call them out by name, a woman named 2%.
Name who? Name, say that again.
Susan, her name was Susan Johnson Cook, who was at
oh!
2%.
Oh, you mean the Reverend?
And if the Reverend, if you ever run into him, into her, you know, that you can tell her that she screwed up politically a whole community. Where she always had a... No, and I'm being serious. She's an absolute political pariah. And she ran. She had no business running. She had never had any connection. And she ran and got 2%, and that was 2% that we were supposed to have.
She worked for Trump.
And she just ran because she wanted to satisfy her ego. And then a guy named Clyde Williams ran, who was always at 7%. And so those are votes that took away, and we had a real
spoiler.
Political crab in the barrel, and so, but I'm still, and I knew, and I could have gone both to the Assembly and the New York State Senate, but I chose not to, because I've been there and done that. So now I'm the still the chief New York County, meaning Manhattan, Democratic
now,
Party.
Now, could you say it again? Because we're having a little bit of trouble with hearing you, and if you guys have any other electrical devices close to your phones, we're getting a little bit of feedback. So if somebody is on another device or something like that, or in the background, you have something, if you're not speaking and you have something on in the background, please mute your phone. Say it again now. You're still in Harlem. You're still doing
not,
what
yeah,
now? You chose
not
to run?
I have no electrical devices. So I'm still the New York, what they call the New York County Democratic leader. You know, those that remember the old Tammany Hall, it was run by a guy named Boss Tweed. So I am now the evolution of Boss Tweed in New York County. So one of my main jobs is to make sure that we elect good judges out of Manhattan. And so I'm still the New York County Democratic leader and in charge of the elections for all of Manhattan. So that's what I do now, along with working at a very prestigious law firm by the name of David F. Hutcher Citron, and that helps pay the bills.
I see. Now, you are the lineage. I mean, your father was Bruce Wright. Judge Bruce Wright was a judge up there in Harlem and was quite well known himself. I guess if I had to explain it, I could say that he was riding the scales of justice as he saw fit. He was known to do that. Would that be an accurate?
That would certainly be quite accurate as far as I'm concerned. My father was a judge, a Supreme Court judge in New York for many years, for about 25 years. He authored about 7 books, one by the name of Black Woman
Yeah, called Black
the name of
Justice
what?
In a White World.
So
Black
the word that was named. You're dropping out every time. It's kind of like a mystery. Kind of hold on for a second. It's kind of like a mystery novel. Every time you get to the butler is, that word drops out. So the name of the book was Black Robes, White Justice, right?
That's right. That's right. And certainly it talked about the black folks in the criminal justice system. Along with America, you know, a lot of people don't know my father was born in Princeton, New Jersey.
there you go. An original Jersey guy.
That's
now,
right.
Keith, can you speak to also, a lot of the urban areas right outside Manhattan and a lot of places are being gentrified, to be quite honest. And one of the main places that people notice that has happened greatly is in Harlem. Can you speak to the changing face of Harlem? And it's the importance.
What's been lost in absolutely, what's been lost is that Harlem is a neighborhood, just like any other neighborhood in New York City, whether it's Chelsea, Gramercy Park, East Harlem, Washington Heights. It's where people go to school. It's where they go to work. It's where it's where they go to church. But I've always maintained that white folks ain't coming to Harlem because they like black people so much. You know, white folks are coming to Harlem because they're getting priced out of their apartments.
Because what?
And because they're getting priced out of their neighborhoods as well. They're getting priced out of the Upper East Side. They're getting priced out of Chelsea. They're getting priced out of Gramercy Park. So, so what people come to neighborhoods because of good transportation and such, and you know, white folks uptown, you know, they found Harlem, you know, to be a place, you know, what we've always known is a place where you can get to any place, you know, you can get to New Jersey, you can get to Connecticut, you can get any Queens, you can get anywhere in a matter of minutes. You're centrally located. So, gentrification is not just happening in Harlem. It's happening all over the city of New York. And you find that you have gentrification where you have good transportation. Look at Bed-Stuy. Look at Queens. There really are no more homogeneous neighborhoods anymore. And, you know, we all kind of have to live together. That's really what's going on.
But do you think, Assemblyman, that Wayne Gilman again? Yeah, I hate to interrupt, but it's great to hear your voice again. I was just wondering, do you think that has had an impact politically on the franchise that, you know, your father, the late Percy Sutton, Charlie Rangel, Dinkins, Patterson, all, you know? What you guys started years ago was like institutional. I mean, it should not have been. I mean, we all know that neighborhoods change. They go through what they go through.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just seems like there was such a significant. I was there on 125th Street a couple of weeks ago, and I was just amazed. I was looking for a restaurant. It turned into PC Richards. You know, I was looking for a place to park. That place doesn't exist anymore. You know, I understand what you're saying, you know, and Harlem has been long the best-kept secret in the city. But I, you know, I just don't know what to say about our political empowerment as a result of what's gone on.
Right. Well, listen, you know, like anything else, neighborhoods, people, things evolve. And I'm not saying, I think right at this moment, you know, in losing the Harlem congressional seat, it's no longer a black congressional seat because we have political infighting. The political dynamic has definitely changed. But, you know, it's no longer. Black
no
area
longer what?
Is what it was. A totally black area. It's no longer a black area. You have all sorts of people living up here right now, and it has affected the politics to a certain extent. But you know, if you have the right message and you have the right person, I think it will be okay. Certainly, Harlem has lost some political power in that we lost Charlie Rangel. Charlie Rangel was in Congress for about 46 years.
Wow.
And had great seniority. And as I said, because we didn't, you know, show a lot of political discipline, it no longer is an African-American seat. So, yeah, things do change sometimes.
That's depressing.
Now, as far as the restaurant you were looking for, you know, I wish I could help you with that. But there, you know, you can go over to Sylvia's at the Red Rooster and you'll be all right.
Assemblyman Wright, a question for you. With the change in the dynamics and the political structure and that which we know we've witnessed it from when Charlie Rangel to the substantial importance of Abyssinia, having, you know, we centrally focused around our institutions. Now that we're going through gentrification, one of the things that's not being coming into the gentrification process is the dynamics of culture. And when you don't use the educational system to help foster diversity as an educational process of understanding each culture, because communities change, dynamics of communities change. And what happens is it's going to always end up being us against them. You recall Harlem had a barrio. Where's the barrio? The barrio now has been moved way up to the Bronx and across the river.
Wow.
There used to be a Harlem from 125th Street up to about Sugar Hill and up to where the Morris Jumaal Mansion sits, and you had the overlook of Harlem's finest. Where is that now? That those people who were there have now become a Dominican Republic, and the Dominican Republic is now way up to Washington Heights and the cloisters.
Mm-hmm.
But what's not being there is the culture and the education and appreciation that's being taught in the schools. If you don't bring that in, it's going to be a civil war.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. What about the United Nations building? Is that still in existence?
Yeah.
Of what importance is that, if they are?
Why don't you take the two of those questions, Keith?
Well, the United Nations building, you're talking about the United Nations down in 42nd Street and First Avenue? That's still there. When was that built? In like 1948, somewhere thereabouts?
Yeah.
So that's still there. That's still there. But, I think you're absolutely right. One of the things that we certainly, when I was in office, and certainly what we've always tried to do, is to make sure our cultural institutions will always survive. Listen, and I think we've done a good job with that. We have the National Black Theater, which is still in existence. The Schomburg Center is thriving like it's never thrived before. One of the things I've tried to do when I was in the legislature, I created something, and I modeled it after Bill Payne and such in New Jersey. Started something called the Amistad Commission.
The Amistad Commission
to make sure that slavery and such was taught in the curriculum in our schools. Certainly, you know, and it's interesting. When we talk about gentrification, yes, we have white folks in Harlem, but you know what? In our schools, in our public schools, I don't see many white children. You know what I see? I see some black children, but I see a lot of African students as well. Neighborhoods change.
Great.
You talk about Washington Heights has become very much Dominican, and it has. But you know what? We have folks, and I look at a lot of these millennials, if you will. You know, they don't necessarily, some of them don't necessarily want to stay in Harlem. They want to move up to Westchester. You know, they're making some money. So I have decided to stay, and I live in the same rent-stabilized apartment that I grew up in, and I'm not going anywhere because the rent is too good. You know, the rent is too good. But a lot of people, you know, they want the white picket fence, a little in a pool, and what have you. And as I'm saying these words as my wife is looking at me, like, you know, she wouldn't mind a nice little house up there.
Well, I have a place for her.
You got a place for her?
Yeah.
Got a place for her?
I can sell you my house.
You got to remember, and let's talk what it is. Our folks, you know, have been moving out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They moved to Queens. They don't want to stay in Harlem. So if you don't stay, how can you create some empowerment, if you will? You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
If you don't stay.
Let me ask you this, because that's the whole thing about, you know.
You don't stay, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, for all of these years, the cultural identity of Harlem, what would you say, 50 years, Keith, was intact, right? And now what you're describing is just, well, within the last, I guess, 10 years, I suppose, would be beginning to take place. And I guess that's when people who used to grow up in and around and frequent Harlem are concerned about that cultural aspect of black culture that made Harlem famous throughout the world.
You've got to be about the community. You got to stay in
right.
the community, be about the community. You know, it's interesting. My mother was born in 1920. She was born on 138th Street in Lenox Avenue. And she stayed, you know, but a lot of folks in her generation moved to Queens the first time they got a chance, right? Moved to Mount Vernon or moved to East Orange. You know, they moved to the suburbs. And that's okay, you know, but you got to stay in the community. Now, I'm not saying, you know, and you've got to move with the times, but yes. And sometimes, you know, the rents got a little too high for a lot of people. But, you know, where else are you going to go? You know what I mean? So it's like the stock market. You know, you may lose some money, but you got to stay in the stock market in order to reap the benefits.
Right, right. And also, too, and maybe this is a general question, you know, it seems that when our communities change, I guess the thing that we're all concerned about, or that I'm concerned about, is that culturally, you know, like you say, we have to stay in the community, to be about the community, to make sure the culture is preserved. Because we know what happens is that these other cultures move in, and oftentimes, obviously, they're going to work to preserve their culture. But certainly when it comes to our culture, cultures like to act like we were never there, obviously.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it.
United States now, act like we were never there. So
this whole nation was built on the backs of black folks. There's no doubt about it. This whole nation was built on the backs of people that was either free or low cost labor, and that's how, you know, you have the so-called 1%, because they were the beneficiaries of the low or no cost labor, free labor.
Mm-hmm. Let me just. I was thinking about this in terms of what happened to you, and it happens in a lot of races. Happens in a lot of races throughout the country, where I don't know why that's happening. We're having a little technical difficulty, but it happens in a lot of races throughout the country that we do that. It happened in Detroit, where the black vote was split with this Muslim woman who got elected. So do you think, and I was just thinking about this, you know, maybe African-Americans should have our own primary, you know, or that the majority of the community gets around, and then let's come together and caucus, much like the black caucuses do in the various states and certainly on the federal level. Everyone caucus. Get behind a candidate and then put that candidate out there, because this is what happens in a lot of races throughout the country, where you most often the best candidate does not get in because you have those black spoilers. Some people are spoilers. Some people are ego driven. That's not something that's just pertained to the black community. But,
well,
you know, I, what do you think about that idea? Do we need to, you know, kind of the community should come together? And I guess that was the old – kind of machine structure to a certain degree. What's your thoughts about that?
I would not have a problem with that. If it happened in Harlem, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
Listen, you know, I anytime you have communities getting together, that's probably that's when you know, I guess the a lot of people are scared for communities to come together, right? And but certainly communities are more powerful if they speak in one voice. And you know it as well as I. There's always been a concerted effort to keep the black community and probably some other communities apart politically. Because if you can divide, you can conquer.
Well, that certainly seems to be what's happening, I guess, on various levels, certainly within our community. Now, let me ask you your thoughts about black MAGA people.
What do you think about...
Oh, you don't know? Okay. Well, there you go.
The black who?
I've heard of them. Like that
MAGA,
black guy
Make America Great Again.
Trump.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, like that one black guy that's always standing in back of Trump when he goes to Florida.
Gotcha.
Talking about blacks for Trump, and he's the only one standing there.
Right.
Best definition that I've heard was what Malcolm said. And go back to his speeches, because Malcolm defined it eloquently. He said the slave who is up underneath the master, and the master sneezes, and the slave says, "Massa, we sick?"
Yeah,
we
right.
Sick.
He has been co-opted into being the shadow of the master as opposed to being himself. And one of the things
that has really
happened with us as a people, when you strip us of our dignity, and this is what's going on with the immigration laws and what's going on with the people coming across the border in the South, strip them of their dignity, separate their families, take the kids out of their homes and dehumanize them, and then you capture them wholeheartedly because they are so dependent upon you for everything. And so when Master sneezes, we sick, Master? That's what's going on.
Absolutely. That's very true. Very true.
And in our final minutes, Keith, before we let you go, what do you think about the Democratic field thus far, and who, if you like someone or you are partial to someone, what do you think about, and what do you think are the best chances? What's your thoughts on that?
Listen, you know, I love it. You have, I mean, everybody, you have such a choice, especially in Democratic, in a Democratic field for president of the United States. This Kamala Harris is probably one of the most exciting persons I've ever seen. And certainly you folks out there know about Cory Booker. I mean, just the fact that, to put his name into running for president is very exciting. And you know what? They're all very different in a whole lot of ways. But there's a real potpourri of, you have a real choice. Elizabeth Warren. A lot of people like Elizabeth Warren. A lot of people like Joe Biden. I happen to think right now, just the way it stands now, it's going to change. I think Joe Biden probably has the best chance of beating Trump right now.
Yeah.
But that, you know, you never know. I mean, who would ever thought Barack Obama would have been the president? So, we have a real choice. But the bottom line, if we need to come together on this and really get behind whoever wins that primary, then we have to be disciplined. And certainly, politically and otherwise, and to make sure that we beat this guy in the White House. So it's a long road. And here in New York, we have Kirsten Gillibrand who's running. And which is an old saying, you know, Democrats have to fall in love with their candidates, and Republicans just kind of fall in line. So.
Yeah.
That's why we had Donald Trump, because they fell in line.
When are you going to run for the presidency?
Say it again.
When are you going to run for the presidency?
Oh, I'm not going to run for presidency because, you know, I always think that, you know, and we as a community, and I think it holds true for any city that you live in, especially in our cities, we get so caught up with national politics. I mean, you know, when people run for president, you know, lines are around the block in order to vote. But the real power and the real impact on our people especially is right here on the local level.
That's
where decisions are made. Your decisions are made in the state legislatures. Your decisions are made in the municipal levels of government. And we get so caught up with what's happening nationally, we kind of have forgotten about how important the local level is.
Amen.
That's what they say. Amen. All politics is local. We got to call another caller. What
All
do you want
politics.
To say, caller? Go ahead. Your line is on, caller. 201 number. Hello, caller. All right. Guess you don't want to say nothing. All right. Oh, hold on. Maybe you want to say something?
Lisa?
Well,
Unmute your phone.
While you're waiting. Okay.
Wait.
Hold on. Unmute your phone.
Yeah. Okay, can you hear me?
Here we go. We can hear you now.
No. Hi, Keith. No. I want to know what you think about Cortez. How do you think she's handling herself in Congress?
Oh, I don't know her at all, but certainly she really upset the political structure nationally. Someone that she obviously has a tremendous national following because of her being so media savvy. I've never seen a first-term congressperson get on 60 Minutes, if you will. And anything she does is being followed nationally. Her job is to disrupt. Her job is to just change the dynamic. And quite frankly, she's doing it very, very well. I mean, for a first-term congressperson to go out there and have a demonstration in front of the office of the speaker, I mean, that's just something that's never seen. It's been seen before. But I think she probably, you know, and I don't know, you know, I don't live in the district, but people want their officials to pay attention to some bread and butter issues. And you know, they want the heat. They want the heat and hot water. They want to get jobs. They want to make sure that their kids are being educated correctly. They want to make sure they get good, adequate health care. So I think that and I don't know if she's doing it or not, but she has she has a tremendous impact, and she's taken the national political structure by storm.
She's a lightning rod.
Right.
Well, there you go.
And she's not alone. There's so many others like that.
Well, we're gonna put an end to it right there. We got only 90 seconds. I want to say thank you to former state assemblyman Keith Wright. Keith, I want to thank you for coming and giving us your insight politics and things like that there. And maybe we can get you to do another run for Congress, and we could really get up in there.
Let's talk.
All right. Make me an offer we can't refuse.
All right.
Thanks so much. Have a good night. All right. And Wayne, good to talk to you too.
We got to get together. So much to talk about.
I'd love to see you, Wayne. Give me a call sometime.
I will. How's Bill Perkins doing, by the way?
Got to go.
Okay.
Talk to you later, Keith.
Another conversation.
Okay.
Wayne, give me a call.
I will.
Join us next week for...
I want to say thanks to our co-host, Wayne Gilman. Wayne, thanks for calling in. Give us your sign-off real quick.
Peace and love.
Short and sweet. Peace and love. There it is for the legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Byron Saunders, thank you, sir, for calling in from D.C., giving us your perspective. Give us your sign-off, sir.
Peace and love always.
There it is. Play it. That's D.C. style.
Join us
every
Wednesday, 8 to 9 o'clock on K. Thompson Live.
All right. That's it? All right. That's K. Thompson Live, everybody. This has been the K. Thompson Live show. My name is Citizen Payne. We'll see you again next week. Blog Talk Radio, 8 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday. The show is also archives. You can hear it then. Take care. Gotta go. Peace.